my purpose today is to spend about 15 to 20 minutes to set a different kind of perspective for looking at health disparities. And we have these other very talented gentlemen who sit on the rest of the head table here who will discuss more of what I call the what. So, so we'll get started here. Depending on which the model you look at in terms of what the factors are that influence health, you can see that actual medical care is actually the least, one of the least pieces that influence public health, particularly as it relates to chronic disease, because most of what we do here is diagnose and treat and manage. But you can see that the behavioral choices and the social circumstances, and I want to really concentrate most of what I'm talking about on the behavioral sources and the social circumstances. Oops, I'll get the electronics together. And if we look at this model for determinants of population health, you can see in the center of this is the person or the individual and all of the other things that impact on the person. And I think from a public health point of view, we need to really, rather than so much focusing on the individual, which we all tend to sometimes do in terms of this particularly chronic disease and things of that nature, we need to look at those things that are really sometimes beyond the control of the individual. And some of the other issues that have to do with what governs what the individuals do, and in particularly as it relates to racial disparities. Clearly, racial disparities is a problem that people of color didn't create. I mean, the whole foundation of racial disparities has to do with a construct that is rooted both at a personal level and institutional level in racism. So what I'd like to do is present sort of a different viewpoint about looking at health disparities. And if we look at it, and my colleagues are going to spend a lot more time talking about what I call the what, because we have to talk about the what. Then we have to discuss the why, and once we discuss the what and the why, we can then get to the how of what we begin to think about fixing is, at least to the extent that we can. and I want to pay particular attention to a group that I happen to belong to, and that's the African American male group, but more than just in that regard, but among some sharing some of the same risk factors that most of us share that make us among the worst in terms of the whole situation of disparities. I'd like to turn your attention, because the rest of the discussion is going to focus on health disparities, but I wanted to bring some other kinds of disparities to light. And this is talking about African American youth. And if we look at African American youth that make up about 15% of the general population, but over a quarter of all the juvenile arrests, and the rest of this you can read, but more importantly, over half of the juveniles that get sentenced to adult prisons are African American youth. Now, this has some real implications. Now, this is another statistic I thought it was sort of interesting, that a male born in 1991, if he's black, has a 29% lifetime chance of going to jail. That means that nearly a third of African American men are going to end up in jail. And this to me is a major public health issue, one that we don't always talk about, but certainly is a major public health implication, because if you look back at the social determinants of health, at the center of it is the individual and the community, and at the center of the community is family. And if the man is not there, that has some serious implications for what the family can be, what the community can be, and all of the other things that we know about. And you can see the differences in this disparity between blacks and whites, too. The other alarming statistic is if you look at nearly half of the people in prison in the United States are African American, even though we only comprise 12% of the population. So all of these things in my mind have a real significance, and I think have a bearing on what we're going to discuss as we go further. Well, you say, well, this and other disparities, and again, I'm sort of setting the tone here for the discussion of disparities, and as you hear the rest of what everyone else is going to discuss, I hope that you will keep some of these things in mind in terms of, because typically you go to meetings and all we do is discuss the what. I can tell you that we got more of this, more of that, and we can break it down by every disease category and everything you can think of, but we don't get to the why. And we need to sometimes begin to get to the why in order to get to some of the how. And I decided that what we need to do is begin to take a historical look at this, and we have to start, for us, with the transatlantic slave trade. Now, during the transatlantic slave trade, there was a thing called the Willie Lynch letter. And I wanted to just bring out just a few quotes from this particular letter that was this gentleman who came to talk to some of the slave owners in Virginia and other places, talked about how you begin to use these people, these slaves, these African slaves, and how you get them to obey you and do the things that you need to do. And so there's and you can go online and get this letter if you like, but I just wanted to highlight some of these things, because what he did was he looked at some of the differences and then began to play on the differences between the people. And he used the things that I've bolded here: fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. And the reason he used these is because he says again here that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. And this particular indoctrination, this is the thing that's chilling to me. He says, shall carry on and become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And you say, well, how can you say that? Is that indeed true? Well, let's take a look at this. Oh, I'm going back the wrong direction. I'll get this right in a minute. Let's take a look. Well, even though we talk about the slave trade had starting here in the United States in 1619, we have to remember that the African slave trade was very much alive on the European continent, and it flourished in Spain so much so that almost 10% of the population of Spain were actually slaves. And this was all in the 1500s. In this country, the first definition of what slaves were and their role was defined by the Virginia Slave Code, which defined all slaves as real estate and therefore property, and therefore had no rights whatsoever. And of course, we all know that what happened in 1776, when the United States declared its independence from Great Britain and talked about all men being created equal. But at that point, by law, African Americans were still considered property and not men. So the Declaration of Independence did not apply to African Americans at all. Now, in somewhere around 100 years, a little more than 100 years after that, there was this so-called Emancipation Proclamation. But even in 1865, as late as 1865, it was still illegal for us to read. And it took almost 30 years after that before some schools began to pop up to help in this regard. It was almost 100 years after that that the Brown versus Board of Education suit came and actually broke down the legal basis for racial segregation in schools. It took another 10 years after that the Full Civil Rights Act, which granted full access to all public accommodations, actually happened. So it wasn't until 1964, as we start talking about why people don't take advantage of this, and why we don't want to go to doctors, and why do you want to do this? Well, the why is because it was only in 1964 that we got the legal right to do so. And in many of our cities, including the city of Chicago, there were many hospitals that severely restricted African-American patients in the hospital and all but eliminated the opportunity for African-American physicians to practice in those same hospitals. So those places were not friendly or kind to us, and therefore it is no secret, particularly those in my generation, and as I look and see some of my colleagues and classmates in this room, in 1969, even in Chicago, trying to rent a place in Rogers Park with a full year's rent in cash in my pocket, I couldn't do it. And it was basically racial segregation. Now, that was just 43 years ago. 1964 is 43 years ago. So how can we expect there to be any kind of equality at all? How can we do this? And the question I always have to go back, well, is this somehow related to the tremendous Holocaust that happened during the transatlantic slave trade? And how has that shaped our lives? And I think it shaped our lives because one of the things that it did was created a lack of self-efficacy. In other words, we as African-American people did not have as a people the efficacy or the self-efficacy that made us feel that we could do some things, that we were part of some things, because for most of our history in this country, we have not been and we're locked out of. And those things translate themselves into the things that you see here. So you can see all sides of the scale. This feeling of not having any power to do anything, which leads you to be depressed or sometimes angry. And some of that you hear reflected in some of the music. This whole situation of readjusting to what is normal. And an example I give, in some neighborhood, if you heard a gunshot, if somebody fired a gunshot outside your house, that would be cause for concern and you would be running to call the FBI, CIA, and everybody else. But in other communities, in many of the major cities around the country, that's a normal activity. And so people have to readjust in their own life what is considered normal to a very abnormal situation. And along with that, they readjust some hormone levels and other things that happen as a result of dealing with this. And then there's this whole issue of self-hate. And we're going to get into that. So you say, well, that's all well and good, Doc. That's all well and good. But that was a long time ago. We're way beyond that now. We don't have those kinds of issues. Well, I beg to differ. I'm going to take you to something that was just done in the spring of 2005. I can get the technology to cooperate with me here. And I'll let these people tell it in their own words.
Thank you.
I must apologize.
I guess I sort of felt like there was not any attention towards me because of maybe my skin color or because my hair was kinky or this and that. Or even when I was younger, there was I don't know, a doll. I used to have a lot of dolls, but most of them were just white dolls with long straight hair that I would comb, and I was like, oh, I wish I was just like this Barbie doll.
Because of the technical difficulties, I'm going to stop right here. But I think you got the point. And the point is that it's not over. The point is that these children, this is 2005. And in 2005, we are still growing children. These are children growing up with an image that makes them hate who they are and wish they were someone else. And that is a direct translation of the kinds of things that happened during the transatlantic slave trade, where the whole concept of being black was considered negative, considered bad, and everything that was white was considered right, considered good, and considered the things that we should strive for. So all of who we were was taken away from us during this particular point in time. Now I'm going to try and get back. So, resume. Oh, so of course it takes me. So the whole point here is that what we begin to see that we have difficulty with trying to understand why we don't take advantage of different opportunities, why we don't do a lot of these kinds of things. I just want us to think about this. And there's I want to get to the end of this, if I can. That's why I like my own computer. And I'm going to skip through. And I just have a couple other slides, and I'm going to introduce the next person. So my question is, why do disparities exist? They exist because they're supposed to. There's no way that you could have a system that's set up like the system that we have in this country and disparities not exist. You cannot expect people who just got access, legal access, to all of the opportunities just 43 years ago to be in the same position that people who have had access for hundreds of years. So that's the downside. But in view of our history, in view of the fact that we just got this access not that long ago, we haven't done that bad. I mean, we're not that far behind whites. If you think about it, if you think about, we have 43 years to be where they are, and they've had over 200 years or 300 years. Hasn't been that bad. In fact, I think whites in this country, if you compare on a global level, the people that are at their level of competition, have fared very poor compared to the resources that have been allocated for healthcare for them in this country. They've done bad, and that actually, we need to all work together to do what it helps to, first of all, eliminate disparities, which in my mind is just the making goal of making everybody in this country equally as sick as whites, which is not, I think, the goal we should subscribe to. Well, no, really. That's what closing the disparities gap means. That means everybody is equally as sick. We need to be talking about moving that bar. Maybe that's a first step, but then we need to be moving the bar to make everybody better in America. And I'm going to stop right there. And I'm sorry for the technical glitches. Now I'm going to ask Dr. Stephen Martin, who is, just for you who don't know, Chicago, that we have the whole gamut here represented. We have Dr. Damon Arnold is a doctor colonel. All right. He's a colonel in the United States Army. But he is the director for the Department of Health at the state level. And my associate here, Dr. Stephen Martin, is the chief operating officer for the public health department at the county level. And then I am the little guy that is at the city level. I only represent the city of Chicago. So Dr. Martin, and then of course Dr. Eric Whitaker, who had the job just before Dr. Arnold did. And actually, it was the trio of us that was the first time in history that at the county, state, and city level, that all three were African American men. It's the first time it had ever happened.